From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Federal investigators are still on the hunt for the farm field or the storage hopper or the factory, probably somewhere in California's Salinas Valley, where a batch of spinach became infected with E. coli 0157H7. It's a rough strain of bacteria that's killed at least one person in this outbreak and sickened 130 more and counting across the country. There's a lesson to be learned, say many food experts. America eats factory food. Most farms and fields are now cogs in a big industrial production line. And nationwide outbreaks like the E. coli scare are part of the price we pay. Defenders say, come on, our food is safer and better than ever. This hour on Point, we're looking at the spinach E. coli outbreak and the food chain that ends up at our kitchen tables. What do you make of the hubbub over tainted spinach? And who's minding the store of America's food supply? We will hear from several experts in this hour, including an organic farmer and a top official at the FDA's Center for Food Safety. Joining me first from Berkeley, California, is Stacy Finns. She's food reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. She's been covering the E. coli outbreak. Stacy, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
What's the latest? Have they tracked it down? They've said any moment now they should know where this came from. What's the progress look like?
Well, you know, yesterday they were out in the fields and at the processing plants, and I suspect they'll be back today. They're taking samples, water samples, soil samples. They're checking out the plants, and it really could be a while before anyone knows anything. They still have to test a lot of what they've taken in laboratories.
This must be devastating for the agriculture industry there. Spinach and leafy greens beyond that, it must just be a very rough blow for that farming community.
Yeah, you know, most of the farmers that we've talked to said they think it's, you know, it for this season. They're not going to be able to make any money this season. And some people have actually just plowed under their spinach and are planting cauliflower.
Remind us of the basics here, Stacy. Exactly what do we know about where generally the infection came from, and what have government officials said people should do in response?
Right. About August 2nd was the first reported incident of someone being infected by E. coli. Since then, it's spread to 21 states, infecting 131 people, including one death. And now we're up to about 20 cases of kidney damage that people have suffered. What most of these people have in common is that they have told inspectors and people from the FDA that they ate spinach, prepackaged spinach, and what the inspectors now have traced it back to is a brand called Natural Selection, which is a subsidiary of Earthbound Farm.
Which is a huge producer. This is a very, very big producer, as we understand.
Well, at least it's a huge organic producer. Now, Natural Selection is their non-organic brand. And they have farms in the Salinas Valley and neighboring San Benito County.
Now, government officials have gone further and said, you know, don't just look out for that. They've said, don't eat any fresh spinach. That's a very broad net, abundance of caution at least.
Right. And, you know, about 75% of California spinach is grown in the Salinas Valley. And they feel that until they can pinpoint the source, it's just not safe to eat any spinach.
What are the suspects as far as the source goes? Where are investigators looking?
Well, you know, they're looking at the water source. They're looking at a great number of environmental factors. But, you know, this is, as you pointed out earlier, this has happened 20 times in the last decade. And in none of those times could they identify the source. So it's really difficult.
They're talking about this being a particularly virulent strain of E. coli as well, putting as many as half of people who get it into hospital a significantly higher portion than in previous outbreaks.
Right. Yeah, that's true. 66 people have been hospitalized.
Dreadful is the way one epidemiologist talks about it. Goes after the intestine, potentially goes after the kidneys, kidney failure. I mean, it's a relatively small number, but the idea that it's so widespread, I guess, speaks to the national industrial scale of the agribusiness we're looking at.
Right. You know, they say that it really, the most vulnerable people are elderly and young people. And, you know, a healthy adult might be able to get over it in a week. But certainly we've seen, you know, more in this outbreak than we've seen in the past.
A blow to a big industry in California, but it's got a lot of people thinking around the country. Stacy Finns at the San Francisco Chronicle, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I want to turn now to Marion Nestle. She joins us, She's a professor of nutrition, food studies, and public health at New York University. She's author of Food Politics, How the Food Industry Influences Nutrition and Health, and more recently, her book, What to Eat. She joins us from Berkeley, California. Marion Nestle, thanks very much for being here.
Hi there.
So this has really got people's attention. A lot of spinach tossed out, including in my house and many, many others. How should Americans be looking at this? 20 times in the last decade? Is there some kind of systemic problem here?
Oh, there's a tremendous systemic problem. In fact, there are so many problems, it's hard to know where to begin. The biggest one, and the one that's most important, is that we don't have a farm-to-table we don't have a farm-to-table safety system in this country that covers agricultural products. The FDA has been screaming about problems with lettuce and leafy vegetables and E. coli 015787 since 1998, when they issued what are called good agricultural practices guidelines for industry to try to get lettuce growers to try to deal with the enormous problems of contamination in the field and the fact that something like this particular kind of E. coli could contaminate their products. And the guidelines cover the enormous hazards of agricultural waste, of animal waste. The problem here is that animal waste gets into plants, and the minute that happens, you're dealing with two different agencies, because the Department of Agriculture is responsible for the regulation of animals that are in the food supply, and the FDA is responsible for plants. We do not have a food safety system in this country that is coordinated. The Government Accountability Office has, for 15 years, been saying this is a disaster waiting to happen. We must have a single food safety agency.
We're going to hear from the chief medical officer at the FDA, but Marion, take us, if you would, to the sort of ground-level challenges here in this very large-scale agriculture. Even now, the source of this outbreak hasn't been pinpointed, as Stacy was saying. It typically is not. It never happens. But what are the potential sources?
Well, it does happen sometimes. Mm-hmm. In the Odwalla incident some years ago, they were able to pinpoint the problem. And that was from apples that had been used for making juice that had been left on the ground, where they must have gotten contaminated with animal manure in some way.
Take us to the farm level, Mary.
The ground issues are complicated. Mm-hmm. There's water. There's soil. There are animals wandering around in and out of the fields. There are farm workers. There are trucks that transport and pallets that transport the spinach to the packing plant. There's the packing plant. There's the water in the packing plant. There are the workers in the packing plant, and so forth. Every single one of those elements needs to be done according to good agricultural practices or food safety procedures that have been designed for other kinds of foods. It's called hazard analysis and critical control point. We don't have those kinds of regulations.
But E. coli comes just fundamentally from animal or human waste? Is that source?
The animals have, and this is again a result of industrial agriculture, because cows, for example, that are grass-fed have much, much lower levels of this particular toxic form of E. coli than animals that are fed corn and soybeans. This is a new form of E. coli. It only emerged in the early 1980s, as far as people know. So it's considered one of these newly emergent pathogens that has occurred as a result of our very highly concentrated animal agricultural practices.
But in California, for example, is animal agriculture cheek by jowl with leafy greens? I mean,
doesn't have to be. All it has to be is in contact with the water supply. You know, if you have very highly concentrated animal facilities, as you do in the California dairy industry, then those wastes have to go someplace. And if you don't compost those wastes or deal with those wastes in a manner that is going to remove pathogens, they can get into the water supply and contaminate the fields. And that is, you know, that's the leading hypothesis for what happened. But of course, nobody knows yet.
Now, what's the organic versus non-organic dynamic here? Is organic more or less vulnerable to this kind of contamination?
Well, different people will argue it different ways, but the research shows that if anything, the organic is safer because it's tested. There are regulations that govern organic food production that require the fields to be inspected to make sure that the farmers are following the organic rules to the letter. And those rules require manure to be treated in certain ways. They forbid planting of certain crops on fields that have been treated with manure except after 120 days. I mean, there are all kinds of rules, and they're inspected. Conventional farmers don't have to do any of that.
But we've never overseen conventional farming on a mass scale in this country at the produce level. Is it a practical thing to do?
Whether it's practical or not, there are other countries that do it, and I think we need to, too. We do not have food safety regulations that cover farm to table. We have food safety regulations that cover, except for eggs, mm-hmm. And that's because of the salmonella problem, where the FDA exerted its regulatory authority and insists on farm to table safety regulations. But we don't have that for produce. We do have it for meat, but only it begins at the packing plant, not at the farm. We don't have farm food safety rules. I think we need them, and I think we need an agency that's going to oversee it.
We're talking this hour about the spinach E. coli scare and the story of the food that ends up on our kitchen tables. Marion Nessel is with us from Berkeley, California. She's professor at NYU, author of Food Politics and What to Eat. Does it all seem like an overreaction to you, a little crazy that the whole country had to throw out its spinach? Or is this part and parcel of a mega-scale industrial food system that serves the whole country? Ellen's calling from Hume, Virginia. Hi, Ellen. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Tom. There's so much to say about this. And my original point was how the confinement cattle can affect the water supply and thereby affect all the produce.
And Mary Nessel's pointing directly at that here, whether they're right next to each other or not.
And whether they are or not is very important. It doesn't matter because these confinement cattle produce a huge amount of manure right in one concentrated area. Because they're fed grain, it's a completely unnatural food for cows. A cow on grass has a tiny bit of a mild form of E. coli in its rumen, which is totally balanced out by the other bacteria.
So is the answer regulation here, or can we imagine a change in that entire confinement, beef production system?
It's huge, but I think if people would educate themselves, and we need to do a lot more to educate ourselves, and I highly recommend people read Michael Pollan's Omnivore's Dilemma, which mm-hmm. will explain a lot of this. We need to educate everybody so that they can understand that the food that we are eating now is not real food. It has been changed dramatically by the industrial food industry, whose only concern is making a profit and not producing high-quality nutrition. It's at the basis of everything in our life, and people who say they don't have time to study this, I don't understand, because the food that we grow and eat in this country affects every aspect of our lives.
Ellen, we're going to dig in right there. We thank you for your call. I want to turn to College Park, Maryland, and Dr. David Acheson. He's Chief Medical Officer for the Food and Drug Administration Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition, Director of the Office of Food Safety Defense and Outreach. David Acheson, Dr. Acheson, thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
So we know you've been on the trail of this E. coli outbreak. Where does that stand? Are you any closer to tracking it down?
We sure are, yeah. We're beginning to focus in on exactly where these contaminated spinach samples may have come from in terms of which processor processed them. And we're now in the fields in California, inspecting the fields, investigating what's going on there, trying to figure out exactly what went wrong and when.
What's the array of potential sources that you've looked at?
We're really taking it from one end of the spectrum to the other. So obviously you start at the farm, you work through the farm, and when on the farm you're looking at all possible angles in terms of the water supply, the irrigation system, local animals, the topography of the land, whether the farm is following good agricultural practices, the health of the farm workers in terms of whether anybody who was handling product was sick. You then move to the processing packaging plants and ask similar kinds of questions there in terms of the processing they're using. Following into distribution, was there any temperature abuse somewhere down the line? And try and put the whole thing together all the way from the farm to the point at which consumers get the product.
Now, we're reading that this has happened maybe 20 times in the last decade. And here it is again, bigger and worse, at least as far as we can tell. What does that mean? Is there some systemic change needed here? Marion Nestle's with us. She says we need farm-to-table regulation, safety regulation of the American food supply. Others say centralization on the mass scale we've seen is itself the problem. How do you look at those two?
Well, clearly we got a significant public health problem going on right now. And as you point out, this is about the 20th E. coli 0157 outbreak that's been linked to either spinach or lettuce since the mid-1990s. Part of this, I'm sure, is a reflection of the increased popularity of this kind of food. I mean, on the other hand, we're trying to educate people to eat healthy and tackle obesity, so folk are turning to sort of fresh produce like this, and I think consumption inevitably will be going up. That behooves us to make sure that produce is safe, and we've got to do everything we can to get on top of that. Is it because of centralized issues? It's certainly, as with many of these food safety issues, as soon as you start to centralize and you have massive packing plants, when something goes wrong, the bacteria can infect, get into many packages of whatever it is, and whether this be ground beef or whether it be spinach, the end result is that you end up with nationwide distribution and a lot of sickness in multiple states.
Marion Nestle, you're the expert here along with Dr. Acheson. What's the question you would put to him? Here's the point man with the federal government. What's the question you'd put to him on the food table safety notion?
I don't want to put him on the spot because I actually think he's doing a great job on this and that the FDA is doing the best it can. But David, do you think you have the resources that you need to track this down and do what you have to do?
Well, there's no question, Marion, that the FDA is dealing with limited resources. And could we do more with more? Of course. In these situations where we have a public health emergency, what we do is we deploy staff who are working on other assignments to get into the field, whether this be getting out literally into the field to do the inspections or analyzing the data in San Francisco District Office or here in D.C., so we do pull people off one area to put in another. Now, the obvious question there is, well, what's the impact on what are you not doing? And with resources being as they are, we have to juggle based on where the greatest public health need is. But unquestionably, more resources would allow us to do more.
But what about the degree of oversight? Marion Nestle says, bring in the kind of oversight for produce that we see on meat with the USDA. Okay, better than that even. But David Acheson, very specifically, do you think that's necessary? Do we need a change in the oversight and regulation of food safety right down to leafy greens here?
I think part of the answer to that is in the final analysis of this problem, and I'm not trying to dodge the question, because you've got to put regulations in the work. You've got to figure out what the problem is and then either offer guidance, make sure the guidance is followed, or regulate it and make sure that the problem is addressed and taken care of at the farm level or the processing level, wherever the issue is. Certainly, that discussion, that thinking, I'm sure, is going to be part of where we go when the dust settles on this and we're no longer actually dealing with the public health emergency part, is what are we going to do to prevent this happening again? And that is going to be a joint effort between not only the Food and Drug Administration and other federal agencies, but also the industry and the states, particularly the state of California in this particular instance.
Sounds like you're open to that discussion of regulation. What about the sheer scale of this, the evolution toward industrial scale, mega agriculture? I mean, this is a matter of public safety nationally. Do we have to reconsider that, or can it be made safe at the scale and in the style that it's practiced now?
I think it's inevitable that the style and the practice is going to continue.
Because there's such a capital investment in it, or because it's safe?
Well, neither. I think it's because there is such a public demand for round the clock, almost literally 24/7, 365 days a year. You name it, whatever fresh produce.
What we want, when we want it, right now.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is the global food market that we're dealing with. And this particular piece is focused on California. So that piece is not going to go away. Decentralizing it is, and I'm certainly not an economist, is probably not the solution. The solution here is to make it safe. And the most likely source of contamination is on the farm. And that, I think, is the area where the focus needs to be. And if that requires regulations to do it, then that's what we should do.
David Atchison, good luck tracking this thing down. When do you think you're going to give the all-clear signal for Americans to go back out and buy packaged fresh spinach again?
Well, as we narrow this in and actually begin to focus on specific growing areas in certain parts of the country, I'm hopeful within the next 24 to 48 hours there will be other parts of the country that do produce spinach where we're going to be able to say they're not implicated in the outbreak and therefore are no longer under concern.
We'll be listening. We'll be waiting. Dr. David Atchison, Chief Medical Officer for the Food and Drug Administration Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition. Thanks very much for being with us.
Appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
It's great to have you. I want to go now to Swope, Virginia, if I may, and Joel Salatin. He owns a 500-plus acre organic farm in Virginia's Shenandoah Valley. He's a proponent of local farming, author of Holy Cows and Hog Heaven and Family-Friendly Farming. Joel Salatin, welcome back to On Point. What do you make of this latest scare and outbreak?
I think it's just, I think it's nature crying enough, and the question is, will we listen? I think that's what it is.
Nature crying. Uncle David Atchison says, look, we've got a huge population and huge demands for what we want, when we want it. He says this decentralization is not likely to happen.
Well, it may or may not, and I'm not here to set national policy. What I would propose is the power of one, the power of every eater, you and me, that as we cumulatively go to a seasonal, local base, that gradually the compromised ecological balance of nature will come back into balance, you know, slowly and gently.
What's the advantage of the local farming movement that you're part of in the face of challenges like this outbreak?
First of all, it's very transparent. When there is a closeness between producer and plate, there's an inherent accountability in the system that simply doesn't exist when there are, you know, long transportation routes between producer and plate. So there's just transparency, integrity, you know, inherently.
But Mary Nissel was earlier pointing, saying, well, it could come anywhere. Water, soil, animals, farm workers, trucks, those things are on big farms and small.
Absolutely, and the small farmers that I know are very aware of those kinds of things. And, for example, we're located at a headwaters, you know, up next to a mountain. Mm-hmm. And so typically, people actually locate, those of us who are in this, we actually are aware of these constraints and try to locate where it's a little more protected ecologically.
Of course, we've got 300 million people to feed. Marion Nestle, you heard David Atchison way up there at the FDA saying decentralizing looks like an unlikely solution. Do you think it's a realistic way to go if nature's crying uncle here?
Well, I think we're going to have two parallel food systems, and we're already seeing that. One of them that's increasingly decentralized and local. You can, for example, buy a perfectly beautiful spinach in the farmer's market in Manhattan this week. It's gorgeous. The probability of its being contaminated with E. coli is vanishingly small. And there it is. It's locally grown. It didn't transport very far. The farmer who grew it was aware of the fact that you need to keep animals away from your vegetables, and uses compost that is treated in various ways. And for people who have access to those kinds of foods, they don't have to worry about this kind of thing to the same extent. What is what the message here is that if we are going to have this kind of industrial agricultural system, we need a much, much better system for regulating it. The FDA has stepped up to the plate in a way that I haven't seen a federal agency stepped up to the plate in a very long time. Everybody should be very proud of what the FDA is doing on this.
And David Etchison, not ducking at all the scale of the challenge here.
Not ducking at all the scale, and yet in there doing it in a situation in which Congress has done every single thing it can to cut FDA's resources, to cripple it, and to prevent it from regulating the food supply.
But they're working on it, and we're more aware than ever of how we rely on farmers, whether great big ones or smaller ones like Joel Salatin. A lot of listeners want to join us. Let me turn to Augusta, Georgia, and Wilbur. Hi, Wilbur. You're on the air.
Hey, tell Joel I read everything he wrote. But getting to the point is that I live in Augusta now. I used to live in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a tendency to dump tons of chicken manure fresh out of chicken plants into fields.
Oh, great.
In Georgia, what they do is they take the sewage sludge, take it to a county called Jefferson County just south of Augusta, and dump the sewage sludge into fields.
What kind? Are you talking public sewage there?
I'm talking about
chicken sewage sludge.
Chicken sludge. That's how they get rid of it.
Yeah.
They have a plant to slaughter beef here. They take the waste from that, the blood and that type of stuff, put it in trucks and take it and spread it on people's fields for fertilizer.
So are you surprised to see this kind of outbreak?
No, I'm not surprised to see this kind of outbreak. As a matter of fact, in Jefferson County, a lot of people, they don't have a countywide water system. A lot of people, wells are being condemned because of heavy metals that are coming from the sewage sludge that's dumped in the fields.
Wilbur, there's a first-hand report, and thanks for bringing it to us, Joel Salatin. That's a worrying description, a long way from the spinach fields we're talking about here. But what kind of threats do you see in the way large-scale agriculture is undertaken?
Well, absolutely, the tenor of this whole program is exactly on spot on as far as noticing that the web of the industrial contamination, see, what happens is when you concentrate anything, whether it's people, animals, a certain species of plant, you know, the Irish potato famine, whatever, when there's a concentration on a magnitude that overrides the environmental safeguards, then the, you know, the magnitude of that just spreads out over the safety barriers, over the built-in safety barriers, and touches the rest of, you know, the rest of society. And this is happening on a, you know, on a large scale on many places because we don't look to nature as the blueprint, as the pattern, the template, if you will, for how we produce, how we handle our sewage sludge, you know, how we handle poultry production or any of these kinds of things.
Marion Nestle, does Wilbur's report there from his corner of the country ring true to you about the way that animal waste is put straight on fields? Is there no regulation of that?
No, there's not. Not really.
I mean, manure's been used forever. Why is this different? Why is this more dangerous?
Oh, it's quantitative. It has to do with the fact that there's so much more of it and there's so much more in one place. It's not as if you have one or two animals spread out over a whole field. You've got thousands of animals in a very close concentration, and their wastes are being put in what are charmingly called lagoons, you know, that you can't even bear to be within 5 miles of because they smell so bad. Well, something has to be done with that. It has to be treated. And there's a lot of research going on into trying to figure out how to treat sewage. But in the meantime, there it is.
But don't these big agro-producers have a gigantic interest in getting this right?
You would think they would. This is certainly not good for the spinach industry. And the spinach industry is getting the consequences of problems in animal production. That's really what's happening here. The thing about E. coli, this particular form of E. coli, is it doesn't make the animals sick. So that the people who are raising animals don't know whether their animals have this particular form of E. coli unless they test for it.
But it sure does go after humans.
That's why we need food safety regulations, so that they have to test for it.
Marion Nestle in California, Joel Salatin in Swope, Virginia. We've been joined by local farming proponent Joel Salatin from Swope, Virginia, owns a 550-acre organic farm in Virginia's Shenandoah Valley, author of Family-Friendly Farming. From Berkeley, California, by Marion Nestle, professor at NYU, author of Food Politics and What to Eat. Right now, Joseph is calling from Needham, Massachusetts. Hi, Joseph. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Well, what do you think, Joseph?
I have just one comment to make. It seems to be most of the comments here are making this assumption that the organic growers are wearing the white hat and the big farmers are wearing the black hat.
How do you see it?
And, well, I don't know if that's not necessarily the case. My problem is that there's an assumption about who's doing what and an assumption about who has more knowledge than the other. And it just seems that that needs to be addressed before we can have a real conversation about what's going on.
But how does the fact of this current outbreak fit into your question?
Well, the current outbreak is being blamed by some of the people on this show on the way that produce is being packaged and sent. And that may very well be the case, but I don't think that necessarily implies that your local grower, who has access to the same information, is going to be doing anything different.
We got it. So let's go in carefully on presumptions here, and we'll do that. Joseph, thanks for calling. Maybe to respond to that, let me turn to Harrisburg, Virginia, and Alexander Avery. He's Director of Research and Education at the Center for Global Food Issues, part of the Hudson Institute, author of the forthcoming The Truth About Organic Foods, been out there as a defender of the agribusiness industry. Alexander Avery, thanks for joining us.
Tom, good to be here.
What do you make of the spinach scare and the spotlight it's putting on industrial-scale agriculture and its unique problems?
Well, I think the spotlight on industrial-scale agriculture is a little bit misplaced. Clearly, there's a problem with leafy greens and lettuce and contamination with E. coli. And we don't only have the 20 outbreaks over the last decade, but we have a bunch of other evidence that indicates that leafy greens and lettuce are particularly susceptible to bacterial contamination on the farm. But I have to, if you'll allow me, correct some misinformation that's been given on this program.
Let's hear your view.
Well, the claim has been made that 0157H7, which is the deadly strain of E. coli, is new and is because of industrial animal practices. And that's absolutely not true. The genetic evidence indicates 0157H7 is thousands of years old, and it's been found on every single cattle herd that's been tested by the USDA, including cattle herds that have been raised entirely outdoors in low densities out in the middle of nowhere. And the claim that grass feeding causes 0157 to virtually disappear from the animal, there's a couple of couple of papers that have said that, you know, indicated that that may be the case, and several papers that have indicated that the opposite is the case.
But here we've got a lot of people sickened, a higher percentage than normal, we read, significantly higher, in the hospital, one dead, a bunch of kidney failure. Okay, it's been around, but it does look like a serious problem. Where do you trace the origin?
Well, there's no question, and the problem is manure. It's the animal wastes that's the primary reservoir for the pathogen. And we have to have better control of manure and manure contamination of all of our fields, both large, small, organic, and non-organic. But the available evidence indicates that organic production, because of its inherent reliance on manure-based fertilizers, has at least as great, if not a significantly greater, risk of bacterial contamination. And I'll turn to one paper, one study done at the University of Minnesota, published in 2004, which found that even certified organic farms had a threefold greater risk of bacterial contamination. 22% of all the organic lettuce they tested was contaminated with E. coli.
Joel Salatin, and this is aimed right at your style of farming. What do you say?
Well, I think that the research is absolutely flawed. I mean, you need to understand that Alex Avery writes papers saying that outdoor poultry jeopardizes the human race, and he has all sorts of domestic fowl and chickens running around in his own house. I don't think he even believes what he says himself.
Alexander Avery, you know, you've got funding there from Monsanto and Archer Daniels Midland, so does it make you a straight-up voice on this? Everybody wonders about the sort of influence of all that big money in this industry. How does it play out with you?
Well, one, I don't know how big a money it is. We're a nonprofit, and we scrape by like most other nonprofits. But you can kill me, the messenger. I don't care what people think of me.
No, we want to hear what you've got to say.
I don't do my own research. I'm citing the research done by independent university scientists, and their research says, multiple researchers' evidence says that organic products have at least as great, if not a greater, problem of bacterial contamination of produce. And the point is they say, well, you know, organics is more highly regulated. Well, they get a once-a-year visit by a certifier. That's the amount of regulation they get. I don't think that Marion Nestle is suggesting that an inspector from the FDA show up at Natural Selections Foods once a year and would consider that adequate. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's adequate in the organic context either.
Mary Nissel, referee this for us.
The industry.
Yeah, we hear that. Mary Nissel, what do you say to this?
Oh, I would agree that the inspection system isn't adequate. I'd like to see far more inspection of these kinds of things. The point is that both industrial and organic agriculture these days are contaminated with manure. We don't know in this spinach case whether the fields were organic or non-organic. That hasn't been determined yet. And so we're waiting to find that out. In the meantime, we have a problem. We know what the problem is, and we've got to do something about it.
Let's turn to David calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hey, well, I was listening to your show, and I don't want to I was raised on at the time. I'm 51 years old, mm-hmm. and the community I grew up in, it was full of family farms. There are no more family farms in our area. Corporate farms have put the family farm is a myth in America. If you're not hooked in on a corporate program in this country, I don't care whether it's through cattle or vegetables or soybeans mm-hmm. or whatever, if you're not plugged into something of that nature, then you're going to be – you just cannot make any money. No one can make money on a small farm anymore, and the point that I'm trying to make on that is that the government – and society has pushed this country into where people are so dependent on the supermarket mm-hmm. and this
what do you think it means for food safety, David?
Well, you're getting a lot of your food, from my understanding, a lot of food is coming up out of Mexico right along the border, and they have absolutely no health inspections. And as far as manure on fields for production purposes, that's been done since time immemorial.
Yep.
But what and my theory on the E. coli and the spinach thing, this is just a small. My guess would be that spinach was probably sprayed down with water that was contaminated. I would venture to say, and I don't know, and I'm not a biochemist, but I find it real hard to see that spinach pulled that E. coli out of the ground. I would say that came from some other source, but I think the whole issue underscores that our society has gotten so integrated into this massive thing that you're going to see more and more problems like it. People are so disconnected.
Yeah, we hear that, and that's exactly why we're focused here, David. And we thank you for
okay.
highlighting
really
it there.
I really enjoy your show.
Thank you very much, and thanks for calling in. Alexander Avery, how about it? We've got David Acheson at the FDA was just saying, we've got a real problem here. It's a problem at great scale. You've gone after the organic industry, but still, we've got to do something about this. What do you recommend? Do you recommend the kind of oversight and regulation Marion Nessel is suggesting?
Well, I recommend that we harmonize our manure handling regulations across the board. If the organic regulations or the organic recommended ag practices are significantly better than the other general good ag practices that are being given, we need to harmonize them across the board, and everybody needs to be under the same set of rules because we have to have a safe food supply.
But what about farm-to-table safety regulation? That's what Marion is proposing. You know the industry. Are they going to sit still for that, or are they going to fight it even when we've got outbreaks like this?
Well, I think we need to be careful. We can say, yeah, let's send the inspectors, let's do the testing. But the problem is the kind of tests we have available won't give you any assurance that you're going to catch any contamination before an outbreak occurs. It's a very scattershot testing process. After the fact, we can go in and repeat these tests 100 times, mm-hmm. and one positive says, hey, we found it. But pre-testing isn't going to cut it. So my question to Marion is, what would she propose that would practically increase our food safety? I don't see any system other than eliminating the bad practices that would demonstrably increase food safety.
Marion, what would that look like? Does it mean
eliminating the bad practices is a really good idea?
But describe it. I mean, do we see farmers then in white lab coats going through the fields as though they're pharmaceutical?
You need to start with the animals. I mean, you clearly need to start with the animals. You've got to find a way to treat their manure. It's really, I mean, that's the
issue.
Pretty
simple. Mm-hmm.
That's the issue that has to be dealt with. Once that's dealt with, then things further down become a little bit easier to handle. You're never going to have a perfectly safe food supply, but you certainly can reduce the risk. And what you really want to do is to reduce the risk for these really toxic microorganisms that are causing so much trouble.
Joel Salatin, when Mr. Avery says harmonize policies on handling animal waste between organic and conventional, does that sound like a solution to you?
Absolutely not. See, you've got to understand the people that he's asking to do this testing and work are the people that for 40 years told us to feed dead cows to cows and gave us mad cow disease.
Who are we talking about there, people?
We're talking about the researchers at the nation's land-grant universities and the U.S. Department of Agriculture. For 40 years, they gave farmers free dinners and lunches to show us how to feed dead cows to cows.
But what's wrong with saying we need better animal waste handling practices right across the board?
Because their best management practices right now are all water-based lagoon systems, and that is anathema to an ecological system. What you want to do is have a grass-based livestock sector, including poultry and pork, and then whatever concentrations you have, compost it. Those are the two ecological systems. But our problem is that with the industrial sector running the regulatory, the research end of our universities, the research will be tainted with industrial solutions even while you and I are demanding ecological solutions.
Alexander Avery, can we get rid of lagoons and go to composting all the concentrations here? Is that practical at the scale of agriculture required to feed the country?
Well, I think the more important question, would it increase safety? And those practices that Joel just suggested, the research indicates, still result in a threefold higher contamination rate from organic produce.
We hear the disagreement on that, and I know we're not going to solve that.
Well, it's scientific facts.
We're not going to solve that on the air right here. But what about the lagoons? We see now a threat to groundwater, we're told, coming from these lagoons. There are problems there, but my question is a practical one. Can we produce enough food for this country without that kind of lagoon?
Absolutely.
Joel says yes. Alexander?
No, if you're going to produce as much meat and milk and eggs as we do today, putting all of those animals outdoors would be both an environmental and human health disaster.
That's ridiculous.
Confinement feeding allows us not only to raise the animals more healthily, but it allows us to collect and treat that manure far more easily and cheaply and successfully than the kinds of distributed systems that Joel is suggesting.
Listeners, you hear the big debate right there. Put them in the bacon bin or get them out on the grass. Isabel's calling from Baltimore. Hi, Isabel, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks.
Yeah.
My question is that it was my understanding that root vegetables actually have more of a soil and water history, or more of a memory, I should say.
Okay.
So I'm wondering why the risk is really with leafy greens and spinach. Why not with, you know, turnips, carrots, anything that will be in the ground longer and absorb all of the things that we're putting in there?
Good question. Marion, what about it?
Yeah, they don't absorb. Plant roots have a very effective system for keeping bacteria out of the inside of the plant. The contamination with the leafy greens is believed to have occurred. The leading hypothesis, and again, nobody really knows this yet, but the leading hypothesis is that there were contaminants in the water that got on the plant, and that when the plant was cut, the bacteria could get into places where it couldn't be washed off.
And so there it is, right on the surface.
Yeah, you can wash root vegetables.
But not in the root. Let me get another call from
it's
Betsy.
It's very hard to wash leafy vegetables.
Yeah, we've heard that. I mean, I guess frozen's all right here, but...
Well, it's frozen because they were frozen before this problem happened.
Right. Let me turn to Betsy in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Betsy, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Your apologist for agribusiness has it totally wrong. I mean, obviously, as you've discussed, the problem is with feeding cattle grains, which is biologically absurd and creates these superbugs and necessitates the addition of antibiotics and all of that to their sick stomachs. But my larger question on this was, it doesn't seem people have talked that much about workers and worker conditions in the field.
Oh, yeah.
And
let's
my experience
that.
Is that often workers are not given a place to relieve themselves and are left doing so in the fields. And this has not really been discussed much in this spinach outbreak.
So that gets really down to the human level. Marion, I hear you nodding on that.
Oh, I certainly am. The FDA's 1998 Good Agricultural Practice Rules for Lettuce specified that there be adequate sanitary facilities in the fields for farm workers, and that is that's a huge problem.
That seems so fundamental.
It seems so fundamental, but in fact, if there aren't sanitary facilities available, then the workers have no choice.
They've got to go somewhere.
They have to go someplace. And then the similar issue exists with keeping animals out of fields.
Alexander Avery, are we headed in the right direction or still headed into trouble?
I think we're in the right direction. Before this outbreak, we had a lettuce safety initiative that's now been expanded to encompass spinach. They're looking at all aspects, organic, conventional, large, small. I think they're heading in the right direction, and I echo Marion's applause for their hard work and jumping right in on this.
Joel Salatin, last word goes to you. The right direction, or do we need a food supply revolution here?
We just need a food supply revolution. As a small farmer, I can tell you every time regulations happen, by the time they filter down to the system, they always put small farmer out of business and help the industrial complex. That's the way it always is.
But can we feed the 300 million?
Absolutely.
Come visit our green fields.
Yeah, come and visit our farm. I'll show you how we produce three times what's the county average. Absolutely, we can feed them all.
Well, and talk to the farmers who are selling foods at the various farmers' markets.
Absolutely.
They're making a living.
Well, yes,
It's a big conversation.
There's plenty of food.
Yeah, we hear the living that's being made there. Everybody's looking at those farmers' markets right now, of course, with spinach off the shelves. This is obviously a conversation that's going to continue to be a very big one for this country. It comes right to our tables. I'm very grateful to each of you for being with us. Alexander Avery at the Center for Global Food Issues at the Hudson Institute, thanks for joining us. Joel Salatin in Swope, Virginia. Joel, thanks for being here.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And Marion Nessel at NYU's professor there of nutrition, food studies, and public health, author of What to Eat. Marion, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.